0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie from anywhere in the world. 130 days ago, January 24th, we received a call from Olga Kuzmenko, and she was ringing us from Mariupol, and I don't know how people hopefully will remember her call, because it was the beginning of that week. It was a Monday. It was the beginning of that week when the Russian Navy were planning to do their so-called exercises off the southwest coast of Ireland, and a number of people contacting Liveline believed that Ukraine was going to be invaded. And I remember vividly that day Liveline was accused by the usual sources, political and otherwise, of warmongering. But on that day, we heard from Olga, who's in Mariupol, and this is part of what she told us.
The situation is more or less calm, but some days ago, I have heard sounds of shooting here. And it used to be not safe when it was all started, because we woke up from the sounds of shooting, and our walls and our windows was shaking.
And this is Olga on Liveline on the 28th of February, 4 days after Russia invaded Ukraine.
In the morning it was quiet, but after afternoon, again we hear the sounds of heavy weapon. And yesterday and the day before yesterday, it was very stressful, because we heard the sounds very, very close. Again, our houses, our walls and windows and even furniture was shaking. It was very scary. And yesterday I tried to help my mom with the food. And when I came back home, I heard a sound of helicopters. I was very scary. And 22 tanks was destroyed near Mariupol. And today, with the great destructions and a building of orphanage also was shelled, and the school was shelled. And also in Mariupol already, I think 50 people have died already.
That was the 28th of February. Olga told us on that day that 50 people had been killed in her home city. The UN now believe 21,000 people have been killed in Mariupol. 21,000. The last contact we had with Olga was on the 2nd of March. And this is what she told us on the 2nd of March. This is the third clip.
Yesterday, we had a very big fight with the Russian invaders. There was Mariupol was chaotically shelled, and bombs hit at a maternity hospital, apartment houses, and school. And I know that a 16-year-old teenager has died, and the hospitals are full of victims. And a six-year girl was killed when her family tried to escape the city. And I know that the pilot who and the military plane, which threw a bomb to Kharkiv Central Square, is already destroyed.
And it has been 3 months almost to the day, March the 2nd, it's now June the 3rd, since we heard from Olga. And as listeners will know, every fortnight we alluded to her name in the hope that she at least was well, and in the horror and the genocide that is visiting not just her city but her country. Olga Kuzmenko. Olga, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Duffy.
How are you? And you're Joe, and you're on WhatsApp. So tell us, where are you? How are you? What's happened in the 3 months since we've been talking?
All this time I have been here. I didn't escape because I don't have a car, and I have an old mother, and with this kind of problems, it's a super complicated task. And it was dangerous because a lot of cars have been shelled, and I have seen burnt cars with and dead bodies beside them without legs, with a burnt face, and it was very dangerous, and it still not safe now because Russians created a special procedure. It's called filtration. They check all your personal information, your phone, your social media pages, and your contacts. And they have been tortured my friend for 3 hours for the patriotic post in Facebook. And they really created a genocide of Ukrainians. So the first month of the war was the worst because it was danger every minute. You never know if you will wake up in the morning. Planes were flying and throwing bombs on the city, and great destructions. I think from 80 till 90% of city is damaged. And
now, Olga, I don't. I understand it is. I don't want you. I don't want you to tell us where you are, because your own must have. Hopefully, that line doesn't go. And the reason I don't want Olga to tell us where we are is that we have a massive Russian embassy in Dublin, way too big for the size of the country. Most of them, it seems, are engaged in listening to, I presume, outlets like this, as well as trying to intercept other connections. And we don't want, given the mortar that Russia has been carrying out in Ukraine, we don't want to give away any idea of Olga's location. Olga, are you still with us?
No, no.
Okay, we'll try and get her back. Try and get her back. Let me. Are you back there, Olga?
Okay.
Olga.
Yes, okay. I'm here.
You just keep to tell us the figure of 21,000 people in your city, which is 90% destroyed. For example, was your mother's accommodation destroyed?
She lived on the 8th floor, and the high buildings were more vulnerable to firing. They mostly fired high buildings. And my house has just 2 floors, so it's not damaged.
Okay.
So we live together now.
Are there Russian checkpoints in Mariupol?
I think yes.
And have you been stopped at any of the checkpoints?
Yes.
And what do they ask? What are they looking for?
Some of them, at the first days of the war, there were a lot of them, soldiers, not. And they were on every crossroad, they checked cars, they checked passports, and some of them were polite, but some of them were not. And they were very cruel and disrespectful.
And I know they tortured, in your example, you can tell of at least one of your friends who was tortured by the Russians.
Yes.
And how
he's okay, but they were beating him for 3 hours.
Oh my God. And you say you can see dead, you can see corpses on the street. Is there, in terms of resistance by the Ukrainian... What was the extent of the resistance, Olga?
I don't think there's a resistance now. People were hoping for military, but I don't know what has happened and why this happened. I think Ukrainians didn't have a lot of military planes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And they didn't have any support from... apart from countries around, but he didn't have much support initially anyway in terms of military equipment from NATO, though we're told that is changing now. The last 3 months, Olga, how would you describe them in your life?
The first month was really hell because I just couldn't imagine that this can happen in the 21st century. It was very hard to realize that a school you attended is damaged, a supermarket that you attend every day is damaged, all shopping malls and government buildings in the city are destroyed. And I don't know how long it will take to rebuild the city and who will do that. And I hope very much that Ukraine will come back.
And Olga, is anything operating? Schools, hospitals, fire stations, postal service, shops. Is anything operating under the Russians?
Yes. Mostly people sell food on markets just outside. Just people sell what they have mostly. They sell food from big cars. They sell Russian goods, Russian food.
Yeah.
And we don't have a possibility to get cash. There's some people who take your card and go to another city to have cash for you. And some schools, which is less damaged, are working now.
Okay, I'll keep coming back because I really think this is important. And I'm sure the Russians are trying to block any communication out of Mariupol. But to those of you listening on Orwell Road and the Russian embassy, you know what you can do with yourselves at this stage. And the sooner the better, according to our listeners, you're all fecked out of the country. You're back, Olga. You're back. Okay. Tell us, what is your day-to-day life like? Now we're in trouble. Okay, Olga, let me take a quick ad break and we'll try and get back on to you.
Talk to Joe on 0818-715-815.
As I said, we were first contacted by Olga Kuzemko back in on January 24th from Mariupol. I don't think many people that day had heard of the city called Mariupol. You have now, and Olga then spoke to us. She was very calm that day, and but there was gunfire nearby, and then, as the Americans had warned, the Russians were about to invade, and they did invade on February 24th. And then we had a brief conversation with Olga when she contacted us on the 28th, then on the 2nd of March. And for the last 3 months, we've had no contact from her until last night when she managed to contact us. And as you can hear, it's a very, very difficult line. But she is in Mariupol, as she says, 90% of her city. 90% of a city, that's the size of Cork, has been destroyed. 21,000 people, including friends of hers, have been murdered. People have been, by the Russians, people have been tortured. Her mother's home and all the apartments in her mother's block have been destroyed. Well, most of the city is destroyed at this stage, but we're not saying where Olga is for obvious reasons. And we'll try and get her back as soon as we get her back, because what she's telling us is truly, truly horrific. Not that we would have doubted it. She said, "I've seen burned cars, dead bodies, danger every minute. I never believed we would wake up every morning in the 21st century in this country to witness what we've been going through." Olga is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing for staying there. And the reason she told us, if you could hear it, the reason she told us she's now staying where she is because her mother is 75 years of age. Olga said she would be gone, hopefully to somewhere safe like Ireland, if she could. But she has to look after her mother, and she's there with her boyfriend. And her mother, you heard that the food, the Russians are in complete control, checkpoints everywhere, schools gone, hospitals gone, infrastructure gone, and the only food they're getting is from street markets. a lot of it is Russian food, and the problem now is money, cash to actually buy that food. Alexandra Fedorov, where are you, Alexandra? Tell us your story, please.
Hi, guys. I'm at the moment beside the Poland border. It's like 15 kilometers. It's a small city called Maspiska, and it's about 1 hour from Lviv. So, but originally I'm from Kherson region, which is fully occupied now. So the city of the Kherson region where I was called Novakakhovka, and, you know, there is a hydroelectrical power station in there. So it's like a very important place strategically. And on the 24th, I once the bombing is started, I took my sister and her daughter, and I just brought everyone to the border of Poland. And they crossed safely, and now they're back to my parents' house in Ireland.
They're in Ireland. And, family is in Ireland. Yeah. Now, given that, are you allowed to leave Ukraine, given your the fact that you are a young man and all men have been told to stay?
Yeah, no, I'm not allowed to leave because I'm Ukrainian citizen, and I'm not allowed. I have to stay here, which I do, and it's my country. I was born here. If I need to fight, I'll fight. So I'm just waiting for some training to be doing, just because there are so many volunteer people trying to get into army. So there is no problem with that. But once I get something, I'd probably go, because there is I'm originally from Kherson region. There is a big operation in there. So to be honest, I wish I was. Maybe not to say I wish I was there, but it's my city, and I always have a contact with my friend.
Okay, Alexandra, stay with us for a sec. I think I have Olga back on a line. Olga, tell us about your day-to-day life there, please.
We just have a walk to buy some food, and my boyfriend for me brings water, and we still don't have water and electricity, and this takes a lot of time now.
And what about the Red Cross and food? Are they there?
No. I think Russians doesn't let them in the city.
Wow. And how are you managing for food?
The second month of war, I met an old man, and we made friends, and he had a car. So we went out of city to the village to buy food, because there were no food in the city, and we sold it in a city. So we had a possibility to earn money and to have a food for ourselves. And he was old, and his car was old, and a woman and an old man on old car. We didn't attract attention from military.
Well, that's good. And how is your mother?
She has lost her place to live, and she lives with me now.
And how is she coping with this awful situation?
Of course, the situation is difficult for everybody. But this situation showed us that humans can handle more than we expect from ourselves.
Yeah, that's interesting. Humans can handle more than we expect from ourselves. So do you accept now, Olga, that your city, 20% of Ukraine, your sovereign country, is now controlled by Russia?
Personally, me, not.
Okay.
But a lot of people do.
But you will never accept it?
No. I know that sooner or later I will leave.
You will leave, okay.
Yes.
And of the people who were left, who were there, Olga, what is morale like? How are people coping?
So a lot of people here are oriented to Russia, for Russia.
Okay.
But now in this nowadays, it's very dangerous to express your patriotic position openly.
Wow. And in terms of money, how are you managing for money?
Some days ago, I got money from my card. I gave my card, my phone, and access to my bank account to some man we know, and he got the money from another city where there's Ukrainian mobile connection because it's needed, but I don't know how we will later.
And Olga, given that your city has been destroyed, but it's now controlled by the Russians, is there any signs of reconstruction beginning?
No, they're just cleaning a bit, but no construction. They have glasses or windows.
Okay. And
one more thing. I wanted to tell that a lot of Russian soldiers are asking for food from ordinary people, and they don't have enough food.
So the Russian soldiers themselves are hungry.
Yes.
My God. Well, that just shows you, doesn't it?
Yes.
That tells you a lot. Well, Olga, and have you dared to hope what might happen, say, within a year's time? What might be happening this time next year?
I hope very much, and this faith let me keep myself sane, that I believe that Ukraine will come back. I believe.
Okay. And do the people that you support, the people that you know, do they still support President Zelensky?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. And what do you think of the support you've received from abroad?
I think that sooner or later we will handle the enemy. We will fight the enemy and win.
And what do you need most, food or guns?
I think food.
Okay. But you say the Red Cross are not there.
No. Not any international organizations. There have been OSCE organization, a Danish Refugee Council before the war, a lot of... but there's nobody here.
Medicine Sans Frontières, no outside organizations. The Russians will not let them in.
Yes.
By God. How would you describe Vladimir Putin now?
Like a monster, like a maniac.
And what do you think of the morale of the Russian soldiers? You say some of them are hungry.
Yes, some of them are hungry. And by the way, when we were selling food, we had a car full of bread, and Russian soldiers stopped us, and they behaved very aggressively and took us to police station, scare us, and to have our car, and to arrest an old man who was with me for 14 days. And he asked me what was I doing before the war, and I said I'm a photographer and an artist. And he said, like, humiliating, like, are you selling a food now? I said, what's should I be ashamed for? And I said that we need something to eat, what should we eat? And he said, I don't care.
It's horrific. And Olga, how are you, like, when we first spoke on January 24th, it seems like 10 years ago instead of 130 days ago. You said you had energy and courage in your voice. How are you now after this horror that has befallen your city and your country?
I feel like I have a new experience in my life, and I think this kind of experience, if it doesn't break you, it makes you stronger. I can have a choice to be desperate or to have a hope, and I choose the second.
Yeah, you're incredible. What do you think, first of all, what do you think NATO should do?
They should have all measures which is possible to make Russia leave us alone.
And what do you think Ireland should do?
I don't know. I'm not a big specialist in politics.
Yeah, okay.
I don't.
Well, you know, we still have a big embassy, a Russian embassy here in Dublin, not too far from where I'm sitting. They have a palatial house about 500 yards from where I'm sitting, which is guarded every day by our Garda 24/7 as the residence of the ambassador. The embassy on the Orwell Road in Dublin is functioning as normal. Do you think we should shut down the embassy and kick them out?
Maybe. And probably if I will leave the city, and I know that sooner or later I will do this, I think about moving to Ireland because I have friends there and yeah. I have a good English.
You're very good English, and you've incredible courage. But you would not leave without your mother, isn't that the
yes,
challenge?
Yes, without my mother and without my cat, and just I have internet from yesterday, and I have been proposed to help me to move through Russia, but Russia doesn't let cats in, so I cannot leave my pet just on the street.
Okay, and I don't want to get any more information out of you in terms of where you might be, because the Russian embassy in Dublin, I'm sure, I'm sure, as we speak, are trying to track you down and eliminate you, because they, as you know, the Russian embassy still go by the lie that there's no war in Ukraine, that you're killing each other. You're not being killed by Russians, that you're torturing each other. You're not being tortured by Russian. And all of this would be over if you didn't have Nazis, as they say, Putin says, Nazis running your country, even though the man who's running your country is a member of the Jewish religion. Unbelievable stuff. So, I will not keep you on too long if you don't mind, because I'm getting more and more worried about that that presence of those people in Dublin and your location. We wish you well. We will speak to you off air, Olga. If there's anything we can help to get to you, we will have a conversation.
Yes, maybe somebody have a possibility to have to let us to help us to escape. We can accept any help.
Okay, and would your mother come with you?
Yes, of course. I will not leave her.
So you're trying to escape?
Yes, I will. If I will have a good chance and good possibilities, of course I will.
Okay. If you can stay listening if you wish, Olga, but I'm also very conscious of your internet connection and your car. I really appreciate you contacting us, Olga. We were every day in the office, we would pause for a minute saying, we hope Olga is safe. Because you're
bombs were whistling over my head, but even one hair didn't fall down from my head. Okay. I'm alive and healthy, thank God. Thank you very much for worrying about me.
Well, Olga, Slava Ukraina, we wish you well. Thanks. We commend your courage. Condolences on the death of so many of your friends and fellow citizens and Mariupol. And long live Ukraine and long live the people of Ukraine. And we will talk to you soon. Please, please, please. You've been doing exceptionally well, but it's a lot of it is luck, I know, when you're dealing with such an enemy. We wish you well, and anything we can do for you after this program, we will do, Olga.
Okay, thank you very much. We will keep in touch. Yeah. I'm always open for communication.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Alex Proshuka is in Kyiv. Tell us, what's your situation, Alex?
Hello, thanks for having me. I can't say it's so dramatic at the moment because, you know, when a Russian army stepped away from Kyiv region, from all this now infamous cities like Butcher, Irpin, Hostomel. It happened like 1.5 months ago. Situation has been stabilizing slowly but surely, and now it's June 3rd. And I can't say if you ever know that it was war in Kiev or some like danger, you will get of course some signs of like some soldiers coming around, some posts, some restrictions, of course curfew and so on. But in Kiev, people are trying to live normal life, and okay. I think it's even. In this 100 days, it is the closest to be normal in Kiev, like it was before the war.
And Alex, is there any reconstruction going on? That's good news to hear. Is there any reconstruction going on?
Sorry? Is reconstruction?
Reconstruction, yeah.
No, I can't say. I can't say. It's pretty normal. Of course, if we talk about like southern part of Ukraine, eastern Ukraine, of course there are missile attacks, there are active fights and so on. But Kiev was attacked like in first week, and then maybe in some other weeks. But you know, last month it's pretty okay.
And the fact that Kiev resisted and they couldn't take the capital city was a major blow for the Russians as well. Let me bring Rusian Marshalsky. You're based here in Ruslan. Tell us your situation.
Well, as you probably all aware that we're here having our own fight. We're trying to help the people that are arriving to Ireland with nothing with them, just the paperwork and documents. So that's why I got involved into the AURI, the Ukrainian Associations in Ireland. It's actually the only registered Ukrainian charity at the moment in the country. And I opened that Palanita project, the shop that you get absolutely everything free of charge you arrive. Donation-wise, it's gone down a lot. We're probably getting 75% less than we used to get. And I'd like to appeal to people that please bear in mind that the war is still not finished and people are still fleeing the war. Especially now we have a lot of people coming from Mariupol, Donbass, and they are very poorly arriving. They are mentally, you know, destroyed. They have nothing with them. We're trying to help them to do as much as possible. From the time we spoke the last time, we managed to expand. We have 6 Palanita charity hubs around the country, with another one opening in Galway, hopefully on the 13th of June. So I guess this is our fight. We're trying to do our best here.
Yeah. And where can people donate at the moment, Ruslan?
They can bring directly goods to number 44 on Clarendon Street in Dublin 2. We are very low on women clothes now, summer clothes. And they can also donate online, and they can bring to the local Palanita shops, which is in Arklow, Wicklow Town, Cork, Cavan, Carrick and Shannon, and as I said, Galway will be opening soon as well.
What do you think the Irish government should be doing now, Ruslan, after 100 days of horrific invasion by Russia? What should the Irish government be doing?
To be honest, considering how big Ireland is, the government is doing its best.
Okay.
And a big thank you to them as well.
Yeah.
The fact that they are already supported and voted that they recognize that as genocide, you know, it's not just a war, it's something more than that. And thank you for all the government support, the way they support the newly arrivals, the way they support on the European level. I think they're doing their best.
Okay, and what do you think about this? I know it's only a cosmetic thing in one sense, but they have a big listening post up there in the Orwell Road. What do you, in the Russian embassy, what do you think of people saying, just get rid of them, shut down the embassy.
Well, I understand those people, but from the different point of view, if you shut down everything, you won't have any chance to send the message. So at least this is the small way of at least sending the messages and communicating with them. So I don't think it'll make a huge difference. But what I think will make a little bit of a difference is Russian people. We have some nice Russian people in Ireland and here. They're joining the Ukrainian community when there's a meetings, you know, at the Russian embassies. Thank you to them for the support. But I haven't seen Russian demonstrating itself, themselves, without, you know, just as a nation to come out and to say, Putin, stop, please.
Yeah, but given, Ruslan, the problem is in Russia, as you know, if you do protest, you could end up getting 12 years in prison.
But there is no Russian police in Ireland, in Dublin.
Okay.
There's nobody here. In Ireland, in Dublin, you have a freedom of speech. You can say whatever you feel. Why are they not there?
And you're saying the fact that there's been no... Well, let's talk about it. The fact there's been no demonstration by Russian nationals outside the Russian embassy in Dublin... But, but surely...
Not necessarily a Russian embassy.
Okay.
Kildare Street.
The Dáil, okay.
Yeah.
But would they, if they had a demonstration in Kildare Street, there would be photographs in the newspapers, and the danger is that our busy Russian embassy in the Orwell Road will be sending back those photographs. Can you identify the families of any of these people?
We know
how they operate.
Yeah, probably that's
it's
true.
It's the families.
Yeah, you're right in here. Yes.
That's what they've been doing for...
Unfortunately, yes. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I don't. I think we underestimate how nefarious they...
You're right.
And remember when Olga was on our programme, and I see a bit of it now again, I'm told on Twitter, but when Olga was on our programme on January 24th, worried about what was happening, the reaction from a number of people was, oh, you're warmongering. But what she said was absolutely came through, unfortunately.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Where is and Andriy Mazurenko, who's been on before. Andriy, tell us how you've been getting on since.
Hi. I'm fine. Actually, I'm fine. Thanks to Joe. Thanks to everybody. We moved back to Dublin, to Mike's house. The guy who called, he's so lovely, he's so nice, we feel very comfortable. I started to work in Dublin Simon community, as I told you, so our children go to school, so we are very happy and very grateful to you, to your help, so everything's great, thank you very much.
And how long have you been living, I'm trying to remember when you were on, I think it was in May, how long have you been living with Mike, who contacted us that day?
We moved to Mike's house, we had I was on air on Thursday, on Sunday we came to Mike just to meet him, to see the house, and next week we moved to his house, and we live like a family, you know, so we have Mike is an unbelievable person, so we love it so much. Yeah. By the way, I told my story to my friends here in Ireland, Ukrainian, and a lot of people really would love to take the same proposition if anybody of Irish people who live in Dublin or Cork and big cities can make the same proposition for Ukrainians. I have families who would love to take this proposition and to share house with good families. So if it's possible, if someone will send you like emails and you will resend me the contact, so it'll be great because I will share it with my friends.
And remember, the Red Cross are still looking for accommodation, told. Yes.
But
yes.
Red Cross do not get back to the people who would like to share the accommodation. So we can make it by ourselves. Yes, so I can give the contact straight to Ukrainian people, and they will contact the Irish people, and I think they will make it the best.
Okay. And your family, Andriy, how are they?
Perfect. They are perfect. So, and we had when we decided to go to Mike, we reminded that we have two cats with us, and my wife said, "Oh my God, maybe he. What if he not don't like cats?"
Okay.
Yeah. And we came to Mike's house, and it appeared that he has a cat in his house. So we came there with our cats, and everything is unbelievable. Yeah. So, so thank you very much for your support.
Okay, Andrew, we'll keep in touch as we will with Ruslan, and as we will with Olga and Alex as well. Thank you. Thank you, each and every one. Joe with RTE.ie.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, this day, most years, bar the pandemic, we are in bloom, which is on again. Unfortunately, we're not in bloom this year. Events have overtaken us, unfortunately. But one of the things I love about bloom is going around afterwards and looking and meeting the various craftspeople who were there. Now, we were contacted, had a discussion earlier on the week about Mother Teresa, and there was a fairly animated discussion, though it's fair to say the majority of our callers came down on the side of Mother Teresa, and as you heard, a number of people who worked with her explained that she didn't run hospitals, she didn't profess to run hospitals, she professed, as one of our nurses who worked with her said, basically what she was running were hospices, where it was caring for people whose death, unfortunately, was inevitable. Now, we were contacted by Seamus Fleming. Seamus, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Grand.
Now, the first thing you sent us was an embroidery of Mother Teresa. Will you explain
this? Yeah, I made a portrait of her.
Well, explain that to us.
Well, I do tapestry as a hobby.
Okay.
I've been doing it for about 60 years.
Okay.
And I've done, I can't remember how many I've done, but I just happened to get this particular portrait of Mother Teresa. Now, I can't remember whether I bought it in the UK or whether I bought it in Ireland or over the internet or anything, but it took about a year, maybe two years to complete, and I had it on a frame.
Yeah.
And so underneath her neck on the right-hand side, there's a dark shadow. And I had the dark in, and I ripped it out. I didn't like it. I put it back in again and ripped it out again. So I needn't tell you, I was up the wall. But I was able to get everybody who has seen it anyway said it's the finest work I've ever done.
And that took you 2 years.
No, well, I'd say it would have taken me about a year. Could have been 2 years. Joe, I've done one at Gainsborough, a very, very big Gainsborough. And it took me 47 years to complete.
Ah, Seamus.
Serious. But I've been working on it on and off over the years, you see. Then there was another one.
Yeah.
Another one.
47 years.
I know, but there was another one, the French tapestry you see there, I sent it in. It was a wide one. It took me 13 years to complete. But nowadays, I can if I go steady on them, I can work, get one done within about 2 to 3 months.
So,
but smaller pictures.
Okay, so you're a stitcher.
I'm a stitcher. A needlework stitcher. I come from a long line of needle workers.
Very good. Okay. You come from a long line of stitchers.
Yeah.
Okay, now, what's involved? Do you get, give it to me, you get a frame,
you get a canvas, right?
Okay.
And the canvas has a photograph on a screen-printed photograph.
Okay.
And you fill it in then with the different colour threads. But if you have a panoramic scene, you can change the scene around, like I did with one particular photograph of a spring setting, and I turned it into an autumn setting.
Okay, now explain to me, where do you start?
I just start on one particular colour on the canvas. Say, like, on Mother Teresa's there, black was the worst colour to work on. And at the time, you see, I only got one of my cataracts done last year. But prior to that, like, my eyesight hadn't been great. I'd been working with a magnified light. And which was very good. So I had the use of my right eye only all the time. My left eye. I had an accident on the Big Sugar Loaf in 1982. I was airlifted off it, and I damaged my left eye, and it's been damaged ever since. So I'm waiting to get that cataract done now, hopefully in the next month. So that's, like, I'm still working with one eye, And now, since I got the cataract done, I can either work with the magnified light in semi-darkness, or I can do it in good light. I can do work the pictures now without the light.
So how did you get involved in doing tapestries, one of which took you 47 years? And by the way, we've tweeted them at Joe Liveline and at RT Liveline to show what you've been up to. How did you get involved in this, Seamus?
Well, one of my cousins was hospitalised for many years. She's born a year and a day younger than me.
Okay.
And she was born with a murmur on the heart, and so she was in hospital for many years. And so for part of her remedial treatment, she was shown how to make pictures. So the picture that she made was half knitted, half crocheted, and part tapestry or embroidery. It was a nice, it was a big, nice scene. And I said, I would love to do that, you see. So one of my great-grandmothers did a peacock with sequins in it in the 1800s. And she did another one of the Good Shepherd carrying the lamb on his shoulders.
Okay.
So it'll just tell you, like, all the family are into this, are into the needlework, and I've always wanted to do it. So, I mean, working on pictures is one thing, but I also do darn my socks.
Okay.
As well, you know, so I'm able to do...
Yeah, but just explain. Now, when you say that, the pictures that you're doing, are you doing with the same needle and thread, the same size needle and thread as people would sew a button onto a shirt?
No, it's a different needle. It would have a blunt head on it.
Okay.
It'll be similar to a needlework, to an embroidery needle, but it wouldn't have a very sharp point on it.
And do you wear protection on your fingers?
No.
Okay.
No, my fingers have gotten hardened now over the years. The middle finger on my left hand is the guide for the needle. And it also takes the middle finger on my right hand takes the brunt of the needle as well.
And you need to be alone when you're doing this. Can you have the radio on? Can you have the...
Oh, yeah. I listen to music or just sit alone doing it. I've done it. It's awkward doing it in front of people because I have a tremor in my hand as well, you see. And
oh, God.
Because I'm right-handed and my hand has been used as a hammer and everything over the years, you know. So it's awkward.
And is there anyone, Seamus, is there anyone following the tradition?
No, unfortunately not. There's nobody. Everybody wants the pictures. The young people in the family wants the pictures. And everybody has got a picture anyway at this stage. There are some I have to give, all right. But other than that, like, I'm putting in for an extension. I'll be 76 this year, so I'm going to put in for an extension to go past 100. I've enough to keep me going past 100 anyway.
And the one that took you 47 years?
That's in London now.
And what was that of?
A Gainsborough. It was a Gainsborough picture. So it's a big farming setting of the sun going down, lots of shrubbery trees in it, and there's the farmers in their knickerbockers and their... coming home from the field. So there's the horse and cart with the hay in it, and the female sitting on the top of the cart, and the farmer walking alongside it.
And when you say it's in London, do you mean in the National Gallery in London?
No, I gave it to one of my sisters, wanted it for her 60th birthday.
And does she know that she got it for her 60th birthday, but you were 13. It's 47 years ago. She was 13 when you started making it.
That's right. Well, maybe, possibly. I started off doing it. I used to, you see, Arnott's was my haven, the haberdashery department in Arnott's. So I started going, I opened up an account in Arnott's in the 1970s, and that's where I started off getting the pictures. Now, it could have been there where I got the Mother Teresa.
Do people still do it? Where do you get material now?
Oh, there's lots
now?
Of people, lots and lots of people doing tapestry and embroidery.
And what is the kick? Is it just the silence, the relaxation? Your mind is totally...
Yeah, like when I worked in a factory type of effort back in the 1970s.
Okay.
And I used to do night work. And okay. When I would come off the night work, I would be sitting down with my needle and thread for the next 6 or 7 hours. And then I'd go to bed, and then I'd get up and go into work, and like go into work in the nighttime again, you know. So mm-hmm. It'd be like that. In the old days, I used to spend about 6 to 7 hours at a time. There was one picture I did. It took me 9 days to complete over one Christmas.
And how many hours a day were you working on it?
It would have been about 8 hours a day. The only drawback, the only snag about all this is that you get a pain in your chest, like the muscles in your chest, you know, in your breast, right across, because you're bent down all the time. And now I've got a repetitive strain in my two fingers on my right hand. So it's painful all the time, but I'm not going to give it up, you know.
And have you ever sold any of them?
No, the only one I got money on was there was a tiger there. You'll see that I sent you two photographs of two tigers.
Yeah.
So there's the big tiger, I've still got that one, and the other tiger is in a green background, I think, or it could be in a black background. But the green background, I made that in the 1990s, and I raffled it off of Focus Ireland, and it was on display in the Bank of Ireland in College Green. Not the big one, the one across the road. And so I raised £3,000 for Focus Ireland in 1999.
But I'm looking at the one you've done of the sailing ship, the Uneaden line.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, now, there's three of those. Okay. There's one of those. My nephew in Melbourne has the first one. And the second one is in Sydney. Another a friend of mine who went out last year to Sydney, he has that one. And he also has his own yacht out there anyway. And then the third one is in County Wicklow.
But the only difference is the real yacht probably was built in a shorter time than the tapestry was done.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
And are you a cross stitcher or are you a cam stitcher?
No, I don't do cross stitching. No. But I've done pettipoint as well.
What's pettipoint?
Pettipoint is the finest stitch in the half cross stitch. So it's a half cross, it's a quarter stitch. And the good thing about the satin stitching, which like Mother Teresa's is in, you can do the finest, the very, very finest stitch with the satin stitch. So you can bring out like hairs. You can put in hairs like, you see.
The detail, you can get the detail.
Yeah, get the whole detail. And if you look at if you bring up the photograph there of Mother Teresa and you see the little crucifix. So I was able to get all the detail in.
You sure did. And is there a museum in Ireland that hangs tapestries?
Oh well, the National Gallery and that they have the big wall hangings. That's all tapestry.
But is there anywhere every year? Is there an exhibition where you can submit your work, Seamus?
No, not that I know of.
Like, is it considered art? Do you follow me?
Yeah.
Could you submit it to the Royal Hibernian Academy, for example? You know, they have an annual exhibition. It's on at the minute. It's wonderful. Have you ever tried to submit your work to an artist's gallery?
I never thought of that at all. Yeah.
But given that one piece can take you 47 years...
Well, but the thing about the 47 years is that, like, I was working on it. See, I get bored when I'm doing a picture as well. I'm very much attracted to colours.
Okay.
And, like, I did one of a winter scene where all the stitches were kind of boxy stitches, if you can imagine that. So
there
was the way it was screen printed. But it was all greys, all grey, grey trees, grey, with snow falling. Now, I was able to get most of that done, and just two little cottages with the lights on. I was able to get that done. But I got bored with that and I just left it aside and started off on something else.
Have you ever abandoned the tapestry?
Never.
Just incredible. And how many of your own tapestries have you got hanging in your own house in frames?
Well, I've got two at the moment. The big one, I've got Mother Teresa and I have the tiger.
And are you working on one at the minute?
I am working on a small one.
And when? What year do you hope to have that finished?
Oh, no, the small one. I did one. I did a rose inside of 2 weeks. That's just a small one, like bigger than my hand. And this one I'm working on now will take, I'll be finished it maybe either tonight or tomorrow, which I just started it off about seven or eight days ago.
Okay, I thought you were going to say you had the seven.
It's poppies. I think they're poppies, but I'm not sure.
And you don't have a seven-year stitch, itch, no. And you still love, have you any other hobbies?
Well, I used to take photographs, and I was a hill walker for 40 years with the Wayfarers.
Okay, say with us, Seamus, because...
Right.
And is there a society in Ireland of stitchers?
No, there was a shop there in Francis Street that had where you could go in and do knitting and crocheting and that, but I think that's gone.
And do you do knitting and crocheting?
No.
Embroidery. So what you call your craft? It is tapestry.
It's tapestry.
Okay,
yes.
Stay with us.
And you see, the other thing is, I can, because the thread is so expensive, I can save on threads by only putting the thread on the top of the canvas and very little on the back, if I can help it.
Oh, the back stitch.
Yeah. No, I don't put any on the back, if I can help
it. Okay. Don't be giving away your trade secrets. Now, I know. Yeah. And thread has gone up in price.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay with it. Seamus, would you get annoyed that I'm baffled by this? That I'm...
No.
I'm giggling here. What do people say to you? Well, you see, people would see your tapestry.
Yeah, and everybody that gets a present of a tapestry, as a wedding present or as a birthday present, or fascinated by them.
Yeah, of course they are. But I did not know there was that much work in them. I did not know. Stay with us, Seamus Fleming, master tapestry, master stitcher.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
See, we were talking about one of the trees, and then we got a phone call from Seamus Fleming, and then he sent us in a photograph of a tapestry which he did of Mother Teresa. We've tweeted it there and at RTE Liveline and at Joe Liveline. Have a look at it yourself. And Seamus then explained to us that one tapestry took him of a Gainsborough, an incredibly intricate piece, that took him 47 years. 47 years. Tom White, are you a cross stitcher, an angry stitcher, or a very relaxed stitcher?
Good afternoon, Joe.
What type of stitcher are you?
I'm a cross stitch.
Okay, what does that mean?
It means exactly that. I make a cross with stitches. And, you can do half stitches or quarter stitches.
Right.
Back stitches, all of them. Yeah, but they're all done through a pattern. You buy a pattern.
Okay.
And all the threads are included.
Yeah.
The needles are included. And you put your... The material is called Ida, and you will put that on a form,
right?
And you start working away on it, and you're working to a pattern rather than the pattern being printed on the Ida. You're starting on a clean, fresh, brand new canvas.
Okay, and Seamus, one of them took him 47 years.
No. Wouldn't take it with the cross stitch. I'm doing one at the moment, and I got it as a Christmas present from my daughter.
Okay.
And I started this before January 1, and I'm about 2/3 of the way through now at the moment.
And how often would you work on it, Tom?
I have to tell you the truth, I didn't do a stitch this week. But
you haven't done
a stitch,
yeah? Like
no, last week. But last week I put in about. Probably
16, 17 hours. Wow. And where is your head when you're doing the stitching? What zone are you in?
Well,
are you listening to music? Are you?
Yeah, I'm out in the sunroom.
Yeah.
And my wife is with me. She's out watching TV.
Yeah.
Detective shows on the TV.
Yeah.
She'll watch them, and I listen to them, and I stitch away.
And how's your eyesight?
I have reading glasses that I use, but I also have a magnifying glass that I put on my chest because the stitches are so small. It's okay when you're starting off, you have plenty of room, but when you start to fill in areas, the stitches get, they don't get small, they are small, but to fill in a small area, you need magnification.
And do you prick your fingers at all? Is there blood drawn?
No. Again, as that gentleman was saying, our needles are blunt.
Okay. So, and could you do it if you had stubby fingers? Do you follow me? Have you piano fingers?
God, I haven't, Joe, no.
Okay, so you have stubby fingers.
Let's say somewhere between. In between. So, but, yeah.
Is there many of you, do you know, is there a society in Ireland?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I met a girl down in Wexford. There's a market in Wexford, and she'd be there every Friday or Saturday morning, something like that. And I went down to see her, and I asked if there was a group of people that do it. And to her, she didn't know if there was or not. People come and they buy. You can buy small ones. Like a couple of years ago, I sent close family Christmas cards made with the cross stitch, you know.
Hmm.
And I've had work sent to Egypt, Poland, a couple of places around Ireland. Yeah. And like that gentleman was saying, when people see them completed and they're mounted in a frame.
They're gorgeous, eh?
I have to say that they're exquisite.
And do you know, Tom, do you know Seamus?
No, I don't. I don't know anyone does a stitch.
Well, I thought you'd be a closely knit group, the stitchers in Ireland, but you're not obviously. And now there's more people. Where is Patrick Dillon? Patrick's in Carrick on Shannon. Are you a cross stitcher, Patrick, or what?
No, I'm not a stitcher at all.
Okay.
I just knew Seamus.
Oh, did you tell us?
I used to work on him in CTL Gentex.
Oh, right.
In the 70s.
Okay.
And he made one for me.
And what was it? Like
a lady's head. And I gave it as a wedding present.
Okay.
And it's still to the good.
It doesn't fade?
No.
And Patrick, was this a commission? Did you ask Seamus to do it for you?
I did, yeah. That was 1975, I'd say.
And when you heard today, well, first of all, you heard Seamus is alive and well, is you?
Yeah, yeah,
Which is great.
Yeah.
When you heard Seamus say one of them took him 47 years.
Yeah.
Well,
crazy,
Joe, the 47 years, I bought it when I would have been working at NCP Gentex in Arnis. And you see, there was threads, I was able to get some acrylic threads of fabric up in Seafield Gentex, and I put the acrylic threads into the canvas. But then when I started using the pure wool threads, I decided to rip out all of the acrylic threads. So it took me the best part of 2 years to rip out a huge amount of canvas. And then start filling it in with the acrylic.
Okay, you're some.
And
pace.
Then I was starting to do the satin stitching as well. You see,
the saddle stitching.
Satin.
Satin. Okay.
I used to walk home with them, Joe.
Did you?
I used to walk home. I lived in Ballyfermot. Yeah. He lived in the ranch.
Ah, down the road there. Yeah.
Yeah. And used to walk home together.
Okay, stay with us. More people want to talk to Seamus and Tom after the break, including a woman who's involved in cross-stitching and Noel Fleming. Noel, good afternoon. You're there, Noel.
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm Seamus's younger brother.
Are you a stitcher?
Yeah. I'm not a stitcher, no, but I'm sitting here looking at four of his pictures on the wall in front of me. And I have what's probably is his pride and joy, and I won't give it back to him. It's of a leopard. It's absolutely magnificent. But one thing I want to say about Seamus, Joe, we're from the ranch, and you're familiar with the ranch, but Seamus is like a landmark up in the ranch. He's about 6'7" or 6'8".
Wow.
And his hands are the size of a dinner plate. I don't know how he even manages to hold a needle. His hands are that big.
And what age do you remember him doing them?
All my life, from the time I was a young child, I remember Seamus.
But was your mother or father doing it?
My mother was a marvellous crocheter. We had my father's aunt used to make us lovely bedspreads. What do you call them bedspreads? Not crocheted ones.
Yeah, quilts.
Patchwork quilts. She used to make them. We have a niece, our niece Sheila, who lives down in Donegal. She's a marvellous crocheter as well. My sister's a marvellous crocheter. And, but Seamus is the man who took up the needlepoint, and he's done extraordinary pictures over the years.
Yeah, but when he was a young boy, a young man doing it, Noel, would he have been jeered? You know what I mean?
No, not really, because it was done in the home.
Yeah.
People weren't probably aware of it. The place he worked in for years, he used to get lots of old material and stuff out of it that would be getting dumped out. And
excellent.
You remember when they built Father Bodoni Court originally.
Oh, yeah.
And they had a common room in it. And our Aunt Enda and Aunt Lucy, who used to have the little shop in the ranch, they used to make up lots of stuff for charities and for Father Victor for sales of work out of the stuff that Seamus used to bring home. But no, he wouldn't have been jeered for it because he is an artist. There's no point in saying
otherwise. Yeah, he is an artist, yeah.
He is. There's no doubt about it. And he's also, he's worked for years. He's done our family history over the years. He's done the history of the ranch and parts of Inchicore. He's gathered up. He has stuff that, if it hadn't been gathered up, would have been lost forever.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Everybody in the ranch.
Okay, let me. And Noel, have you a hobby?
I have lots of hobbies, Joe.
Craft work.
not craft work. No. I've worked all my life down the Liberties, and I'm involved in lots of things down there.
Okay, Connie Tantrum is on the line. Connie, don't tell me you're a cross stitcher.
Oh, thank
Connie
you,
Tantrum.
Not everybody gets that. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at my control room here with Dave and Niamh, and either of them got it. They're wondering what I'm laughing at.
No, it's about 1%.
Oh, Dave has now got it.
Gay Byrne got it.
Oh, did he?
He did.
It's Connie Tantrum. Yeah. This is Connie Tantrum across Stitcher. Tell him.
I just wanted to say two things.
Are you on the board of Stitching Ireland?
I am.
Are you a closely knit group?
Oh, seriously, they are a closely knit group.
Oh, okay.
They really are, and that's why they do it, really. Well, that's not truly all of it, but companionship and friendship is something. I wanted to say two things.
Okay.
One is that
now,
I
don't
am
lose
on the board of the
Connie, Ross Connie, don't use your tread here. Try and keep to the straight line. Go ahead.
Okay, in New Ross, we have stitched in the County Wexford, actually, and a bit in Kilkenny. We have stitched 15 panels telling the story of the Normans. This exhibition is, they're absolutely brilliant panels, 6 foot by 4, they're huge. They're on loan to the OPW at the moment in Kilkenny Castle. If anyone wants to see them,
well done.
Do go. That's brilliant. But apart from that, talking about stitching and men, the husband of one of our stitchers on the panels did that cross stitching. John Neville was his name.
And,
he was a marvellous stitcher.
Are you telling me, Connie, that cross stitching, which Seamus does, is more difficult than other types of stitching?
I don't know that it would be more difficult. The stitching of the Ross Tapestry, I think there are about 7 or 8 different stitches that they use to get texture, and, you know, it just makes it that bit more complicated. But the cross-stitching is fantastic. I think John did it from kits. I'm not really sure. But he raised funds for every good cause in the area by making them.
I wonder, Connie, did many people take new hobbies, new crafts up during the pandemic? I'd love to hear from them. joe@rte.ie over the weekend. Thanks, Connie. Seamus Fleming, well done. You're a legend.
Thank
Seamus.
You.
And Seamus, do you sign your pieces of art?
Oh, I do, yes.
Okay.
You see it down there, it's JS.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Seamus. By the way, before we finish, a great, great man, a legend of Dublin Bus, retired today, Tommy McGork. Tommy retired today after 32 years service. Talk about Seamus, the 47 years tapestry. Tommy McGork is in 32 years service. He's 11 grandchildren, and apparently they took over a bus this morning with the help of Dublin Bus, and they gave him a great, great send off. Wow, another great public servant Tommy McGork, and well done, and well done to everyone in our public service and indeed our public transport. The most memorable quote I heard this week was from Margaret, wasn't it, earlier on? Maria, who told me that All Saints aren't canonised. The credits for today's programme: Niamh Hamill is the producer, the series producers, Lisa Marie Berry, Dave Gibson's on sound, and Ray Darcy is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe at rte.ie. And now you can send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 184 3709.